And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I actually saw, through the clouds, the moon. I know you're not going to believe that, but I did. For about 5 seconds. here's what I'm thinking about right now. Sometimes when I don't mind telling you, I'm a people watcher. I find it so fascinating to study human behavior. And, it's just interesting how people, conduct themselves. But sometimes one of the things that gets me is sometimes people can be so sick. I mean, you can tell. You can look at them. You can see the look on their face. You can see them blowing their nose. You can see them hacking and coughing, and you think they're near death. But for some reason or another, they think it's a great idea to go to a home supply store or to go maybe to a movie or to a restaurant. It just boggles my mind. Well, I know you've heard this story before, but wait a second. Maybe if you're young, you haven't. But a long time ago, there was a woman by the name of, she got the nickname Typhoid Mary. I think my mother was really good about telling me all sorts of stories at bedtime, but I almost am positive she covered some of the harsh realities of life. But it's part of your education. Anyway, when I was reading about her, there's a type of a bacteria. I think it's called Salmonella typhi, or typhi, and that's where we get the disease called typhoid. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, you're going, I don't remember hearing about a typhoid outbreak. Well, they still occur around the world. It's not like it used to be. But there was a point in time that some of these ships that would come from Europe, full of immigrants, and they would come into Ellis Island, that a doctor would go on the ship, and he would say, there's nobody getting off this ship because there's an outbreak of typhoid. Or in other cases, there might be influenza or some upper respiratory tract infection. The doctor would say, oh no, you're going to be quarantined until everybody is free of the flu or a cold. But that's not the way it is with typhoid. Usually when the doctor would enter the ship after letting them quarantine for a while, he would find that the lower decks or the holds where the people were probably packed in like sardines. Could you imagine how long it would take to get sick if you were surrounded by that? That's kind of why I'm talking about people that go out in public when they're sick. Or, I don't think that a person should go to church if they're sick. I think they should respect that there's other people there. And there's always going to be some people that attend a church service or out in public that have compromised immune systems. And I'm just referring to the immune system is just about completely worn out. What if a person's had multiple rounds of antibiotics? Well, their immune system's exhausted. It really doesn't have a good footing to be able to handle a new case of COVID or the flu or whatever RSV virus, whatever you're coming across. They don't need to be exposed to that. So if you're sick, you just need to stay home until you get well. And then after you've self-quarantined, then you can come back out in the world without spreading your germs everywhere. Does that make sense? But when it came to the doctors at Ellis Island inspecting some of the holds of these immigrant ships, and oh yeah, I've read about them, it sounds like a, it sounds like a concentration camp where people were looked like death chewing on a cracker. So, what do you do if you're a doctor and you go into the hold to inspect the health of these new immigrants to make sure they're safe to come aboard and be processed into America, and half the people are dead? I mean, how scary is that? Well, anyway, there's a story of a woman by the name of Typhoid Mary. I think I have read in the past that she died sometime in the 1930s, but I think here's the first point that I want to make. You know, there's some people in this world, they're called carriers. And Typhoid Mary was definitely one of those. I mean, she did not want to come to terms with it, I promise you. She did not want to be singled out as somebody that should not be around other people unless they wanted to die. So, well, nobody wants to die. But anyway, there's some bizarre stories around hers. But some people that have typhoid, they can actually harbor it or carry it either in the gallbladder or the kidneys. Now, folks, I don't know exactly why. Typhoid likes to hang out in the gallbladder. I don't know the answer. I don't know what likes the kidneys. But if a person's recovered from having typhoid or typhoid fever, they could still be a carrier of it for the rest of their life. And that was the case of Typhoid Mary. Well, there was a gentleman that owned quite the estate on Long Island in the year 1906. He actually called Dr. George Soper. Yeah, I was reading about him. Well, Dr. Soper came to investigate this outbreak of typhoid fever in the house where 6 out of the 11 people in his home were severely affected with typhoid fever. I mean, how would you like to have a high temperature? How would you like to be nauseous and have diarrhea and vomiting and feel like you're fixing to die? Well, no. And so after meticulous research, Dr. Soper discovered that it was the cook in the kitchen that was the carrier of the bacillus, or the typhoid. And she came to work at the house as a cook. That was her occupation. But she left just before Dr. Soper came up with his information about it was her. She just magically kind of disappeared into the night. And found out later that when they actually got a hold of her, she was indignant that they would even accuse her, even though she knew full well that she'd had a bad case of typhoid. Anyway, she finally was interviewed by the New York City Health Department. And she said, "Okay, I'm guilty. Everybody got sick because of me. I won't do it again." But they found out there were several other homes that she worked at as a cook. And in the process of doing so, she got a lot of people sick. Now, one part of the story I just find so bizarre. One evening, a man came up to her cottage, and if I'm not mistaken, it's been a while since I've read the story, but he requested that Typhoid Mary come to serve as a nurse for a young mongoloid child. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but that was the terminology they used in the early 1900s. And you know what the guy called Mary? He said, "You are a destroyer." And so when I read that, I thought, they brought Typhoid Mary to take care of this young mongoloid child for one reason, and that was to make sure that he no longer lived. Well, that's just horrific. That's horrible. Anyway, my whole point is this right here. You've got to be on your guard today. You really do. I don't want to be someone that spreads fear, but, I mean, there's just so much at play here. How do you know that there's an individual in a laboratory in China that has family problems and he's stressed and maybe his superiors don't really appreciate him the way that he'd like to be appreciated, and he finds a way to get a deadly virus out of the lab into the human population? It begins to spread and you have a whole bunch of people die. I mean, I always think of these things when I read of stories of, let's just call it Virus X, or, you know, that's not far off from reality. What is it called? GX. And where they experiment with mice and rats, and all of them, their eyes turn white the day before they die, and it's 100% lethal. Well, isn't that kind of scary that there's things like that that they're experimenting with? I'm just curious, are they trying to weaponize a virus? Why would they do that? I was explaining to my sister that they have been trying this vaccine for the COVID-19. It's not something they just spent 6 months working on kind of willy-nilly. No. They've been experimenting on these since the 1960s, trying to find a way that would work. But to make a long story short, I want to give you some information. What can you do to help yourself? And so I came across this article last night, and it comes from the year... Well, I don't know that it matters. It doesn't have the year on here, but I could look it up for you. But have you ever heard of an herb that's known as St. John's wort? Well, I'm going to share some information with you, because what I want you to do is I want you to be able to decide for yourself, what do you want in your arsenal? How do you help protect yourself if you have to go out into a world where there's going to be sick people that really only care about themselves? I don't know how else to say it, but do you call that selfishness? You know, they're sick as a dog. Every time they cough or sneeze or hack up something, they're like a virus-spreading machine just spewing forth. Okay. The title of this article is In Vitro Screening of Antiviral and Viralcidal Effects Against SARS-CoV-2 by Hypericum perforatum and Echinacea. So what they're doing is they're not testing remdesivir, they're not testing vaccines, they're testing two things that are just found in nature. And so Hypericum perforatum, which is what I'm going to focus on, they also test Echinacea. I'm not going to really focus on that. I thought I'd just give you one thing to think about. It's really called St. John's wort. And so here's a study right here. A team of researchers at King Abdul Aziz University, that's in Saudi Arabia, what they did was they exposed cells to the SARS-CoV-2 vaccine in test tubes. At the same time, they exposed the cells to extracts of what? It's called St. John's wort, both before and after exposure. So they tried it a couple different ways. The researchers also did the same with Echinacea, but what I'm going to do is I'm not going to put that information on hold, because that's like, it's a different set of numbers and figures, so I thought I'd make it simple. So the researchers wanted to determine what was the effect of the St. John's wort extract on the reproduction of the virus. And so I need you to think about that point. Sometimes people get a viral infection, and what you're thinking is there anything that I can do that's going to interfere with this virus's ability to replicate or reproduce? Because that's where you have the problems. It's not so much there's one virus that enters your body. No, your immune system can probably, it's going along and says, hey, what is this in the back of your throat? This is a COVID SARS virus. Let's eat it. Let's kill it and digest it. Okay? But what you want to do is you want to stop the virus from replicating. So here's the results right here. If the researchers exposed these cells, human cells, to St. John's wort extract either before or after the infection with SARS-CoV-2, the number of virus particles was reduced. That's the first point. So when I read that, I thought, okay, so St. John's wort, for whatever reason, it may have several mechanisms by which it works. It's a natural compound. The side effects are just about non-existent. They reduce the viral load. Oh, isn't that interesting? So exposure before the infection occurred seemed most effective. I don't know if you get what that says. I probably should have slowed down as I read that research to you. If somebody took the St. John's wort before they actually got sick or was exposed to the COVID, then the results were extremely effective. Now you're thinking, well, how do I know when I'm going to be exposed? Well, what if you have to take a family trip somewhere and you know that they've given you a call like a child is sick or an adult is sick? That would be a pretty good way to put this to the test, is just maybe consider St. John's wort as something that might offer you some protection against having a viral infection. And so they're suggesting that, or this information suggests, that St. John's wort supplementation may actually reduce the risk of infection with the coronavirus. Now, I will say this. In this particular study, they did show that St. John's wort did work better, or it outperformed the echinacea. Always think of echinacea as being a good herb to prevent sickness. And I've read studies in the past that shows that people that take a little bit of echinacea every day, they tend to live significantly longer. But the way that I'm going to interpret that is, well, if your immune system is working better, if it's more robust, if it's able to keep you in good repair, if it prevents the cancer cells from growing, if your natural killer cells work better. Well, isn't that all part and parcel to keeping you alive? I mean, what's the counter of that? An immune system that's exhausted and worn out when you're 65 years old. You don't want that. In another study, the researchers first exposed the coronavirus to St. John's wort extract before the virus could enter the cells. I like that one. It says the St. John's wort also reduced the replication of the virus in that study. You know what this means? Let me kind of break it down and make 3 points, and I'm done with this article right here. That means that St. John's wort can theoretically protect a human body or a human being, male, female, there's only two genders, by the way, against the SARS-CoV-2 in 3 different ways. Number one, components of the St. John's wort work directly to inhibit the virus. Okay? That's what you want. You don't want the virus being able to reproduce without anything to hold it back. That's called infection. You want to end up in the hospital intensive care with on a respirator, a ventilator, a tube down your throat? No. Number two, it plays a role in inhibiting the virus from actually entering the cells. Well, to me, if all I had was just that, I would say that would be a gold mine. Okay, number three here. Once the virus has penetrated the cells, it inhibits the virus from replicating. So that would be an example of what do you do if you've already got the virus and you want to make sure that your immune system can actually respond in a great fashion and keep your body from getting sick. Okay? One last detail. This is what I highlighted. I just kind of highlight the things that are interesting to me in the study. It comes from Science Magazine, 2022, December 15th, Volume 12. Anyway, the hypericin, which is the compound that comes from St. John's wort, it inhibits the formation of the proteins in the virus capsule. Okay, that's probably like a little bit too much information, but to me that's so fascinating. Okay, study number two, and this is a substance that you've heard of over and over again, but I thought to myself, at the very least, you need information so you can make good choices to help yourself. Okay. Here's a meta-study that confirms quercetin's antiviral potential against COVID-19. And this is another one that I thought was impressive. I remember back in 2020, 2021, which wasn't, you know, that terribly long ago, all this stuff was heavily poo-pooed by a lot of, I'm just going to say, experts, or they had degrees and they had positions which made them an expert, and in all likelihood they are. But they said, we don't want anyone taking quercetin. This is hogwash. Well, is it really? So if somebody has a case of COVID-19, in this particular study, they're showing that a daily dose of at least 600 milligrams, that was the minimum. I think in the study they used somewhere between 600 and maybe 1,000 milligrams a day. Okay, they're saying it may reduce the risk of admission to the hospital. Or, you know, like I said a while ago, what if you don't really need to go to the ICU? And what if really you don't need to die? What if you need to live? What if God has given you a work and you need to get after that work? Well, you can die prematurely from making poor decisions. Is that correct? Okay, it is. For example, if somebody abuses their body with drugs, how can you say it's not fair that they died? Well, they died because of abusing the drugs. Anyway, okay, here's a study right here. Researchers from Kermanasha University. I know I butcher these names. I'm so sorry. So, Kermanshah University of Medical Sciences in Iran, they traced 5 previously published trials in which a total of 455 subjects, I'm sorry, got it wrong, 544, I don't know how I did that, but I did. So there were 544 subjects, and they didn't have a super serious version of COVID, but they did have COVID. Well, that's like saying, I'm sick. Do you want this sickness to progress to pneumonia? Do you want to go to ICU and be put on a ventilator? Well, no. That's why they're trying this, to see if they can do something to prevent a person that's already sick with COVID from getting worse. All the trials were double-blinded, randomized. The subjects in the group received either... Oh, I got the numbers wrong. Sorry. They got quercetin. They were given that, which is a flavonoid compound. For example, you get quercetin in apples. It's right there in the skin. You ever heard the phrase, an apple a day keeps a doctor away? Did you know that onions are naturally high in quercetin also? So they got somewhere in a supplement, you know, in a capsule, 500 to 1,500 milligrams a day for anywhere between 1 and 4 weeks. So they didn't take it super long. And by the way, you know this time of the year. This is the time of year when everybody gets sick with something. So this information really is pertinent if you want to keep your body in good working order. Don't let your body get so bad that you have to go to the ICU. Okay, here's the results right here. And this is where they tried to break it down. Supplementation with 600 to 1,000 milligrams per day of quercetin, that's spelled Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. Okay, here's what happened. When they gave them 600 to 1,000 milligrams of quercetin a day, it reduced the chance that the subjects had to be admitted to the hospital by 70%. I don't know about you, but what drug is there that if they give it to a person with COVID, reduces their chance of being admitted to the hospital by 70%. Well, I don't know. Well, maybe you do. You need to call and tell me. I'm teachable. The chance of the stay in the ICU was reduced by 73%. Okay. Well, that's a significant. And guess what? If you took quercetin for 1 to 4 weeks when you were sick with COVID, it reduced the chances of death by 82%. Okay. Now, what they did was they did one particular blood test. And quite often, this blood test is a part of just a standard blood chemistry's profile called a comprehensive metabolic panel. It's called LDH. And so a lot of times I'll look at LDH just to see if the numbers are in the normal range, or most commonly, if your number called LD, or your the abbreviation LDH, which stands for lactate dehydrogenase, but usually, you know, a lot of people have been calling it forever lactic acid dehydrogenase. So if you have a blood panel done by your doctor for a physical, or you went for a reason, they said, let's test your blood. Let's see what the labs show. Let's look at some of these lab markers to try to determine what kind of your health is. And so there is a test called LDH. Okay, so what does that mean if that number goes up high? Well, simply, it's a sign that you've got excessive tissue damage or gland damage or cell damage. Maybe in a nutshell, I'm saying that if LDH is elevated, that's a clear sign that your body's breaking down faster than what it should. And that's not where you want to be. That could come from everywhere from your muscles breaking down prematurely. It could be the liver. It could be the kidneys. Maybe your red blood cells are breaking down. If you had a high level of bilirubin, that'd be a pretty good indication that, you know, your red blood cells are breaking down prematurely and they're leaking bilirubin, which is building up. But it could also point toward the pancreas or the heart or the brain. It's been shown that when somebody's had a heart attack, LDH goes up elevated. The other big one, and this is not Roy trying to be negative to anybody that's listening where this might be relevant, but yes, LDH goes up when there's cancer. Okay? Because there's a lot of destruction that takes place in the body when there's cancer. Okay, back to the quercetin. That's really what I'm wanting to talk about. In the trials, and this is the way they worded it. I'm going to word it differently. In the trials, quercetin inhibited the increase in the enzyme LDH. That's what's on your blood test. This suggests that the virus caused less damage at the cellular level. Okay. I'd probably say a little bit differently. I'd say maybe quercetin did a great job of enabling the immune system to actually do its job better and to work the way that God designed it to. Does that make sense? Maybe an apple a day does keep the doctor away. Or is it an onion a day? Okay. If you would like to call me on the phone, there is a phone line officially open. It's 903-589-8507. I'd be happy to take your phone call and get you in. I have a brand new book in front of me. It's called Principles and Practice of Phytotherapy by Dr. Kerry Bone and Simon Mills. And these guys, man, do they pack the research in here. It is incredible. So a lot of times we want to believe that there's not much research based on natural remedies, but there really is. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. You are the answer to my prayers today. Were you, like, your ears buzzing or something?
No, not at all. Why are you saying that?
I have been sick since January 5th. Just had a chest x-ray, nothing there. They think I'm that virus person you were talking about. Picked up this, picked up that, and still congestion, and still trying to figure this all out.
So, well, where's the congestion located?
We've narrowed it down to the head.
Okay.
You know, it sounded like it was in the chest. Even went to the doctor, had them, you know, listen, and said I had bronchitis. But the chest x-ray shows nothing.
So well, I'm still going to go with the doctor. If the doctor hears rattling in the chest, and it sounds like bronchitis, and you got congestion, then you got it. Who cares what the x-ray says? The x-ray is just telling you whether or not you got a case of pneumonia or not, probably.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
So, just a different way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. So this quercetin, this was, you know, an eye-opener with you saying all this, because I've tried all kinds of things. They just put me on a heavy-duty nose spray, and I picked it up yesterday, so we'll see if it opens up the head. But a pot of steaming water with all the herbs in it. I used doTERRA for massage oil to warm up the sinus passages, nothing. So this quercetin, I'm going to try this. Anything else I should be throwing in to my batch of goodies here?
Well, I'm expecting you to be the expert on you. Nobody knows you like you do, right?
Well, kind of. Well, I guess, yeah.
You're the one that lives in your body. What would you say is the number one issue that you're facing right now? What's the number one problem?
Coughing, head congestion.
All right, describe the cough to me.
Deep belly cough. Deep, hard belly cough, and nothing or very little is productive.
Okay, so it's not like you have yellow and green stuff coming up out of your lungs. Okay, good.
No.
Tell me about the
head.
What do you mean by the head congestion?
Foggy, eyes feel swollen, my voice is, you know, this sounds good today, but it's been very, very rough sounding. Okay. Everybody who talks to me, you know, kind of quarantined myself up at the farm, but everybody says, oh my gosh, you are really sick.
Like, oh no, you know, don't come out in public. Well, when you blow your nose, does anything come out?
A lot, but all clear.
It's all clear. So you never went through a phase where it was just totally yellow or green or brown?
Nope, nothing.
And your nose is not bleeding all the time?
Nope, not at all.
Do you have a fever of any kind currently?
No fever. Never had fever.
Well, did the doctor do a blood? Did the doctor do a CBC with a differential to determine if this is viral or bacterial?
No, no.
Okay.
Haven't been to the doctor that way. Only went for the chest x-ray.
But that's all they wanted to do, is just a chest x-ray to see if you had pneumonia or something like that?
Correct.
Well, what is the name?
thing after talking to you, after listening this morning, is I'm going for some blood work.
Well, I think that would be, I can't imagine why they didn't do that when they had you there. That would have taken like maybe 2 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
How many times at night are you waking up and getting up and going to the bathroom to urinate?
Only once.
Okay. Do you feel refreshed when you wake up in the morning?
No.
Okay.
Because I cough so much through the night. You know, well, if I lay down, I have to sit propped up.
Now, I'm only sort of telling you the truth in a jokey way when I say this, okay? What farmers used to do when cows had a bad cough is they'd put apple cider vinegar in their trough.
Oh, okay.
So, but for you, what I want you to do is I want you to do this 3 times a day.
Okay.
Take 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar. There's plenty of brands out there that are good. But one that's easy to go to, because it's so consistently excellent, is Bragg's apple cider vinegar.
That's the one I use.
Okay. And so what you'll do is, you'll take 2 teaspoons, and you'll put it in a cup of warm tea. And it's fine with me if you use throat coat tea, or lemon ginger tea, or hibiscus, or green tea. There's a bunch of them out there that are really good. But if it's warm, that should help the teaspoon of honey that you're going to add to it to dissolve.
Okay.
And so you're going to sip on that at least 3, maybe even 4 times a day.
Okay.
And so if you'll do that, let's see if the apple cider vinegar plays a role in helping your immune system respond more better. wasn't that great English? Would you like to be more better?
I would like to be better.
So that's very easy to do, and chances are you already have raw honey and you already have apple cider vinegar in your cupboard, right?
Yep, and I have all those teas mentioned.
Okay. A long time ago, if you had a human being that had a horrific asthma attack and they couldn't breathe, you know what the top remedy was back in 1901? They'd take a pan of water, or in your case, like a steam kettle, and they'd put an entire cup of vinegar in there. Not white vinegar, what? But apple cider. And they'd have him breathe it. Now, one thing that vinegar's awesome stuff. I know I'm getting sidetracked slightly, but you remember when tens of millions, if not 100 million people perished in Europe because of the Black Death or the plague?
Yes.
Well, it was so bad, there were so many bodies in the streets that they had to release the inmates from the prison and said, okay, we got an offer for you. We're going to turn you loose if you'll do one thing. Well, what is that? We need you to collect the dead bodies and either burn them or bury them. And they said, okay, deal, if you let us out of this hellhole that we're stuck in. And so part of their wages were they gave them vinegar wine, garlic vinegar wine to drink. And I always find it so interesting that from the documented, the diary notes of modern doctors back during the plague, those that collected the bodies, the inmates, they never got sick and died. But that's what they were sipping on all day long was garlic vinegar wine.
Wow.
I wonder if they sell that at Walmart. I don't really know. So what you're looking at is you're looking at that. Now.
Okay.
The other thing, one thing that I'm a huge fan of, when they you remember back in the 1920s, I can't remember who was the archaeologist. His name might have been Carter. That seems like that's the right name. But he discovered King Tutankhamun's burial chamber in his royal room where they had all the articles he needed for the afterlife. They were intact. Nobody had raided or stolen everything from him. It's like one of the greatest finds in the pyramids or ancient Egypt of all time is, you know, the opening of King Tut's tomb. Well, one of the articles, there was a jar. And when they unsealed it, it was completely filled to the brim with raw honey soaking on top of cloves of garlic.
Oh, wow.
So this is not a new remedy. Just like during the Black Death or the plague, the idea of drinking garlic fermented vinegar wine wasn't like a new remedy. That was the poor man's beverage, not the high quality stuff, I guess. But I was just suggesting it imparts tremendous health promoting qualities or properties to it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if you happen to have any garlic cloves that have been fermented in raw honey for like about a month, if I were you, I would consider eating about 6 to maybe 10 of these a day for the next 5 days to see if we can't get your immune system to actually get rid of the infection.
Gotcha. I will start marinating them immediately.
Well, it takes a while for them to ferment. But anyway, let's go on to the next thing.
Ferment.
There is an amino acid that I think is really worthy of consideration. If somebody's mucus-lined membranes, like yours are just totally draining and full of gunk, clear gunk. It's called N-acetylcysteine. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes. Uh-huh. I have some. NAC, right?
Yeah. Have you been taking it?
No.
Well, now I need you to consider that. So depending on the size of the...
Right now.
There you go. Knock the dust off the top of it. Maybe you should blow it outside in case there's lots of... have your husband take his leaf blower. I'm joking. But what you would do is you would take somewhere between maybe 1,200 to maybe 2,000 milligrams a day, and you're going to find out within just a few minutes to maybe an hour if it's working. You have two or three things that will happen. Either you'll experience more drainage. I don't want you to interpret that as bad, like, oh, my goodness, my nose is running more. I'm coughing up more clear phlegm. That's good. Let's clear the evil spirits out of you. So N-acetylcysteine can actually play just a tremendous role at helping this. Now let me go on to the herbal kingdom for just a second.
Yeah.
One of the most famous herbs when your immune system is just stuck. You can't seem to get over the hump. You've taken everything that you can think of. You've tried echinacea, you've tried garlic, you've tried golden seal, and it just won't budge. That's where you might want to take a look at what's called Andrographis.
Andrographis.
Okay. Andrographis. You got that right.
All righty.
Just kind of phonically spell it out. Andro and then graphis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot of times I've seen that get me out of a pickle with somebody over and over again, that when their body just won't budge, that's almost like a turbocharger on their immune system to help it to rise to the occasion and get the job done. Because what you want is you want closure. You want to return to normal and say, well, I can breathe at night. I feel good. I have nothing left to talk about. I feel amazing. I am no longer sick. So that would be one thing that you really need to consider.
Okay. How about that bromelain? You've mentioned it.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's like the perfect food enzyme that you can add to the N-acetylcysteine. And that stuff can be quite amazing.
Okay.
Now, the other study that I read this morning, they did show that St. John's wort was really good against viruses, where in the way they tested it, they only tested it after people were fully sick with COVID-19. And they said, what can we do with these 6 people in the hospital to keep them from being admitted to the ICU? And they gave them St. John's wort.
Okay.
And it worked really, really well. Well, and, you know, the other reason why I bring these up, what'd you say?
I wrote that all down, what you said this morning, because that fascinated me. I remember taking St. John's wort years ago. Is that kind of like the same as that Sammy stuff they had out years ago?
It's not the same as.
Okay.
That's an amino acid. The Sammy is an amino acid. It's a sulfur-based methionine. But, yeah, that works on a different level. But the St. John's wort, even though that's taken quite often for people that have depression, and that was actually one of the articles I was going to copy off last night, they show that St. John's wort has actually proven to be more effective than most antidepressants at helping to stave off depression and help elevate a person's mood, but without the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, for example, if I talk you into eating, onions or garlic or apples or, honey and whatever else, what are the side effects? How many people get rushed to the emergency room because they had a teaspoon of raw honey?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure it's happened, but I just don't know I've ever heard of it.
So you've mentioned onions and garlic before. Do they have to be raw, or can they be sautéed? Or,
well, if you do have them raw, you're going to get the highest concentration of quercetin.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm sure you're hungry for an onion sandwich right about now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm definitely,
And then this next thing is my opinion, okay? And so I can't tell you that I have many scientific articles that proves what I'm saying, but through experience, I would say yes, it does. Do you know what castor oil is?
I sure do.
Okay, I don't think there would be anything wrong, and let's just say your normal habit is before you go to bed, you like to shower. Well, after you step out of the shower, as you're drying off, I think it would behoove you to just take plain organic castor oil, if you can find it, and just rub it directly into the skin over your frontal sinuses and all over your nose and on your face where the maxillary sinuses are and behind your ears where the mastoids and all over the neck. And just see if, for some weird, strange, bizarre reason, that you all of a sudden you start making some progress in a short period of time.
Okay.
What have you got to lose?
Exactly.
You got nothing, and actually castor oil is like, see, everything that I'm mentioning, I know that in the back of my mind somebody's going to say, well, isn't that harmful? Well, yeah, 1 in 1 billion people might have allergic reaction to it, but by and large, these are natural compounds that God has made.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I don't know that I've ever read where somebody was rushed to the emergency room because they had garlic on their chicken. Have you?
No.
So these things are relatively rare, but if you said how many people had an adverse drug reaction, I mean, I think the current estimates are that they say that there's 17.1 million people that have died worldwide, died, that is, no longer living, as an adverse side effect of the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
And which I'm not trying to stir up trouble, it's just, it's a fact.
Agree.
Well, I think it's a fact. Anyway, I don't know that you're going to get modern media like CNN to say, newsflash, if you've had this, then, you know, this explains why so many people have died. Personally, I've never seen anything quite like it. I've never seen so many human beings literally harmed, maimed, injured, nearly destroyed, as well as I've seen a lot of people that have died immediately following the vaccine. I just have never seen anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? When they've done all these studies on animals, guess who dies also? The animals do.
That's right.
Anyway, have I given you enough to work with?
You have. I am so grateful. This was a definite God thing to wake up early. And
Well, I'm glad you got through. Good job. Your persistence has paid off.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope you have a very good day, and I hope you make a fast recovery.
I will now with this new arsenal of supplies here.
Good. Good job.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Bless you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. You too. Bye-bye. Okay. I did push the right button. Okay. There's a phone line open at 903, or let me give you the number to the station right now. This goes directly to line number one. So it's 903-589-8507 if you'd like to call and ask me a question, okay? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. So a while back you were talking about labs that you could look for signs of like Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
What were those?
Well, the one that I think I was referring to, there's two that might give you a clue. One is called it's called homocysteine. Have you ever heard the term of homocysteine?
Yes.
And so I think the article that I referenced, it demonstrated that as that number starts going above 7.7, when it's actually measuring the homocysteine in the blood, the higher that number goes, the greater the prediction or tendency toward the development of Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that you might look at is called MCV, mean corpuscular volume. That's a different way of looking at it. But they have a bunch of new tests that are really good at predicting that. This brand new technology where they measure like ApoA and ApoB. I just haven't studied those enough yet to really speak with it on, with great confidence. But so from what I understand, because, they're very predictive. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk over you.
Okay. No. I'm sorry. So I'm just going to go for like a general checkup at the beginning of the year, whatever. And I've my grandfather had Alzheimer's. I feel like my mom is showing signs, and we don't go to the doctor. So I'm like, what can I do just to where can I start? So
you mean to prevent it?
Yeah.
Or are you saying with labs?
I guess, but I mean both, because I'm curious.
Okay, well, let's just kind of break it down piece by piece. There's a marker called C-reactive protein. Have you ever heard of that one?
No.
C-reactive protein is a blood test, and what it's doing is it's trying to measure inflammation. I know I can be long-winded on these things, but I'm trying to give you like a background so you understand. Have you ever heard of the word inflammation before?
Yes, sir.
So, for example, if somebody had a high level of C-reactive protein, even if they told me, but Dr. Morgan, I feel fabulous, I have all the energy in the world, my sleep is perfect, I'm still going to say, well, what's the source of the inflammation? Do you have a chronic low-grade mm-hmm. infection? Do you have a hidden allergy? Do you have another problem that needs to be addressed? But inflammation is, by and large, one of the things that drives all this. Just like we probably talked about, the worst thing that you could do is just do the standard junk food, high-sugar diet.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's called high-sensitivity C-reactive protein, or just C-reactive protein. Those are two different ones, but they're very accurate. But that would be one lab test. And so if your number comes back zero, I'm going to say, way to go. Even though you're not going to a doctor, you're taking good care of yourself, you're a good steward, you're trying to make great decisions, you got great habits, your lifestyle's perfect. Has anybody ever told you that you're perfect?
No.
Oh, me either. Okay, rats. I was hoping to meet a perfect human being today. So what you could do is you could ask for a high sensitivity. It's just HSC reactive protein. I would ask for homocysteine levels.
Okay.
And then they can do what's called a CBC with a differential. I love that test because it gives you an intimate look into the immune system and what it's doing. Now, I'm going to part from my conversation for a second. I'm going to go on a 10-second rant, okay?
Yeah.
Every time somebody tells me they went to the doctor and they never saw the lab test and the doctor says the labs are perfect, nothing to worry, nothing to look at here, I don't believe it. Because when I actually say get the labs and I look at them, you might find four things high and three things low, and I'm going, well, what's this? I mean, literally, a person could be in kidney failure, and they could have a fatty liver, and they could show they've had a heart attack, but the physician chose to say the labs were fine, which makes me think, well, the doctor really didn't read them or didn't pay attention. But anyway, so you always ask for copies of your lab test, but a CBC with a differential. I think that's an excellent test to order. The other one is called a comprehensive metabolic panel.
Yes.
As a side note, there is a compound that is produced in the brain that's been shown to be very low in people that are prone to Alzheimer's. It's called BDNF for short. That stands for brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So if it were me and I was concerned about maybe the potential of dementia or short-term memory loss or cognitive problems, I'd probably have vitamin D3 measured and also vitamin B12 measured.
Okay.
Then you should ask for a lipid profile. And then they do have a new test where they measure what's called APOB. And I can't remember if it's BA ratios or H1, H2, but it's a relatively new test where they can actually measure. You know what I would have you do? If I had my laptop computer, I would type in, what are new blood tests that help measure the potential development of Alzheimer's? And it'll come up so you could actually ask and request that. Yeah. And maybe a urinalysis also. I know we covered a lot of area, but these things, they give me a lot of they'll give you a lot of information as to what's working right and what's not working right in the human body.
Yes.
Now, can I waste your time for 30 seconds, please?
Sure.
Okay. Now, this is something that I'm really attracted to because I'm probably the most biased person you're ever going to meet, and I always make that apparent. I don't lie to people and say I am unbiased. I'm totally biased. I am for natural remedies and substances that help the human body function better and to heal and keep them in good repair. I'm totally biased against things that are toxic that destroy human health. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's my full disclosure right there. I was reading research, and I find it so interesting. I purchased a book off, it's probably a website you've never heard of called Amazon.com. Oh, you have?
I think it's your favorite website.
I know, it's just my standard joke, because usually it gets a little chuckle from some people. But it was all about research on Baltic amber. Do you know what Baltic amber is?
I don't.
So the next time you're in public and you see a woman holding a little bitty baby and there's a necklace around the child's mm-hmm. neck, and that necklace looks like it's a amber-colored stones, well, that's mm-hmm. Baltic amber. Well, in this chapter on Alzheimer's, they're talking about there's a deficiency of what's called succinic acid in people that have Alzheimer's, and it goes through what's called the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally expecting you to understand what I'm talking about. This is biochemistry. Anyway, but they're showing that people that wear Baltic amber, it actually may play a role in preventing Alzheimer's. Now, I am not overpromising that to you. Roy's not trying to make a guarantee saying, I guarantee if you wear a Baltic amber yeah. necklace. But you know what? There's a lot of things that we just don't know about the human body and healing. Would you agree with that?
I do.
And if you look at the latest statistics on the development of Alzheimer's, I pretty much can guarantee you with absolute certainty we are not winning the war on it, are we?
Yeah, no.
So what do you say about the an approach to treat Alzheimer's if it's growing by leaps and bounds every single year? You would say it's failing,
obviously
wouldn't it?
Obviously not working.
Yeah, obviously it's not working. I like your answer better. So I would have you look into that just out of curiosity. But the other thing, I'm just going to all over the place. You've got to put some stress upon the brain to get it to develop and to grow new brain cells, and that means exercise and learning. Mm-hmm. You can't take a person yeah. that has full-blown Alzheimer's and say, would you like to walk 2 miles with me and start an exercise? They can't do it. They've lost their ability to do that. And they don't ever read, and they don't use cursive handwriting. That's what I'm trying to talk you into. Practice cursive handwriting every single day. There's something about that connection between a piece of paper, a pen, and your brain to preserve your neurons, to keep them in good working order. But become a lifelong learner. Be very aggressive. And to me, it's just so exciting. There's so many things that God's given us that we'll never get to the end of it. Have you ever tried reading the Bible? I don't understand a tenth of it. It just continually unfolds right before me. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So, have I answered your questions, or would you like more?
You have answered my questions, but I will always take more.
Do you know what aluminum is?
I do.
Have you ever heard of mercury?
Yes.
Arsenic? Has anyone sprinkled arsenic on your fresh spaghetti? Don't eat it.
No.
Well, these are called heavy metals, and they're all very toxic. And that's you want to mess up the mm-hmm. brain. Heavy metals are a way of doing that. And so there's a very simple, straightforward test called an elemental hair analysis. I mean, they're really cheap to do. I think the lab that I use, they charge $49 to run it. Okay, I know I said that's cheap, but I'm talking about the year 2024. If this was 2004, yeah, maybe I could have got it for $20. But, you know, times have changed. Everything costs more. So for $49, that is absolutely one of the best screening tests for heavy metals. And so without going into great, great, great detail, we're not living in a world that's called the Garden of Eden where there's no poison anywhere or toxins. We're exposed at every turn. That's one of the reasons why Dr. Hugh Fundenberg, a gerontologist, he said basically if a person gets 3 to 4 consecutive flu vaccines, and those contain a metal adjuvant called aluminum, mm-hmm. which is toxic to the brain, Those people, if you get 3 to 4 consecutive flu vaccines, they have a 700 to 800 increase in the risk percentage. That's 700% increase in developing Alzheimer's. Now, you can go to the doctor, and the doctor can tell you this. They can say, that's a bunch of baloney. Well, that's not what the studies say. He could say, that doesn't matter. Well, that's not what the studies say. He could say, go ahead and trust me. Well, that's not what the doctors say. You've got to be your own advocate, and that's what you are. I've already figured that out about you. You're going to do the very best you can, while you can, as long as you can. And I like that. I admire that very much. That's a great quality.
Thank you.
So that's one thing, and I'm not telling people on the radio, don't ever give a flu vaccine. That's a personal decision. If somebody decides today that they want to go to the store and line up and say, I would like the COVID vaccine, the flu vaccine, and 13 boosters while I'm here, can I get those, please? Why, of course you can. That's what we're here for. You can do that. I'm not going to do that. If you want to, that's your choice. But, you know, there's always consequences to our decisions. Have you ever made a bad decision?
I have.
I have, too. And the thing of it is, we can learn from it. But that's one thing about being a human being. You're going to have failures as long as you can learn from it. But don't give up. I kind of have some heroes in the Bible. I love the story of Nehemiah. Oh, boy, did he deal with a lot of difficulties, but he overcame because the Lord gave him strength and he didn't give up.
Yeah.
I actually feel sorry for guys like Jeremiah that tried so hard. But what did the king do? He took the word of God, cut up, and threw it in the fire. Oh, my word. I don't think that's going to go well, do you?
No.
So here we are. Think about those things. One more study real quick. I don't have the exact quotation, but I watched a YouTube video that covered the study. I don't know if that counts. But they showed Japanese people that have the highest percentage of what's called omega-3 fatty acids in their cell membranes, they live 5 years longer than the average American with low levels of omega-3 fatty acids. And I thought to myself, you cannot make this stuff up. Omega-3 fatty acids that come from, say, for example, ocean fish. It's kind of like antifreeze to the fish. But we've got to have it. It's essential. You cannot make it. But are you kidding me? They live 5 years longer, or maybe a different way I want to say this, is they keep their health in better repair for 5 years longer as opposed to the persons whose health is not in good repair. And the body just stops working. I told you the story about me talking to the mortician the other day, didn't I? Well, if I didn't, I'll tell you now. Well, I asked her, I said, do you feel sorry for these young people that die of what they call natural causes? She said, you mean the ones that die when they're 25, 30, 35, and 40? I said, yeah. She says, absolutely not. I said, well, why not? She said, it's their own fault. They're the ones that are smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. They're the ones that are drinking endless amounts of alcohol. They chose to only eat pure junk food for their sustenance. They're the ones that chose a lifestyle that's very, very destructive to the human health. I'm not going to flesh out what that means, but you can figure it out. And so she said, I'm not sorry at all for them. And I'm going, well, you know, they did bring it on themselves, didn't they? But there's consequences. So when you learn, like, for example, omega-3 fatty acids, what do you think I'm telling you to do? Consume cod liver oil every single day if you want to keep your brain in good working order.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've already had 3 grams today. And I'm not saying that for any other reason, but I'm just telling you what I did. These 3 big honking gel caps, I like it, though. And plus, I can't afford to lose one more brain cell. Anyway, I hope this all helps today.
All right, yes. Thank you.
Yes, have ma'am. I enjoy the phone call. I hope you have a great weekend, ma'am.
Thank you. You too.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, you're listening to Health Essentials. I'm your host, Roy Morgan, on KBGS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, and Longview.